Hey everyone, this is Mikey Vapor from the band Chains Over Razors, and I'm giving you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Rackman, and we have a special night for you, an evening with a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So that's a killer masterpiece theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how it is.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. English and
starting
Russian at the same time. I don't
starting
know.
Starting to feel very British as I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest and bid you adieu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please
thanks
listen
you.
To our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya.
Hoza.
Hey, everyone. This is Mikey Vapor from the band Chains Over Razors. And you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Guys, you're on live with Ragman, Mono E Mono, with a brand new band, and they're brutal. From Chains Over Razors, Mikey Vapor. Give it up, people. Hey, Mikey, how you doing?
Woo! Hey, what's up, buddy?
How'd you like that intro, man?
Oh, it's perfect.
You know, you don't get that with every interview you do, do you?
No, I really don't. Usually it's like, hold on, wait, and roll.
Oh, yeah. Well, we do things different here because we're actually fans that love music, and then we do this as our kind of our side thing. We just do this for fun, man.
Awesome.
But, hey.
I have enough on air here.
Do what now?
Thank you for having us on air.
Oh, no problem, man. I appreciate you guys making time for us. It's a Saturday afternoon. We should all be drinking beer by now.
Oh, I had plenty last night, and I'm feeling it today.
Well, dude, you got that Goose Island. Do you ever get that bourbon? Are you into the craft brews at all?
I'm actually a big whiskey drinker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I hit a little harder.
Oh, yeah. We're like craft brew total beer nerds here. And Goose Island has this, it's a bourbon-aged barrel stout that is probably the best beer I've ever tasted in my life. It's just amazing.
Nice.
Because you get that bourbon, the bourbon barrel taste within the stout of the beer, man.
It's
coveted, man. So they come out like once a year, and then you got to fight tooth and nail to try to get a bottle.
Oh, man. That's like there's a brand around here called Gumball Head. And as soon as it gets in the store, it's sold out immediately. And any places that have it on tap are always sold out. Nice hoppy flavor. Probably one of the very few beers you can actually drink with a meal without ruining your meal.
Oh, nice, man. Nice.
Yeah, very tasty. And like I said, I'm a big whiskey drinker, so beer for me is very rare. And that's one of the few brands that I've tasted outside of, like, Anti-Hero. Right? Is it Anti-Hero? Beer that actually has that nice hoppy flavor, but doesn't taste like piss beer.
Yeah, we do not care for piss beer, and we'll let people know when we get a shitty one, believe me.
Nice.
That's actually another aspect of the show. If you're not familiar with us, we rate beer and we talk metal. So, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
No, it doesn't. You just need a slice of pizza along with that.
No shit, man. We usually grill up these big-ass burgers, man, so it's like burgers and beer. Every once in a while, a little pizza, man, a little pizza. When you're in Texas, man, we'll have you over for a cookout. We'll make the Texas-sized hamburgers and get you some. We'll find you some whiskey, but we'll introduce you into some bourbon barrel-aged beers as well.
I'm definitely in.
Well, I tell you what, so the band's Chains Over Razors, which I got to say, the name of the group is awesome. And with all the different, it's kind of funny. I'm an old school guy. I've been listening to metal for 40 years. And the names of bands coming out today, some of them are like two sentences long. You kind of wonder if there's any originality in some of these names. And, you know, when I heard the name of your band, I thought, wow, that's pretty fucking cool. I dig that, man. So is that something you belabored over, or did it just come up one day when you're drinking whiskey? Or, I mean, how did the name come about for you guys?
Maybe whiskey was involved. My brother Andy over here give you the whole spiel on it.
Yeah, the actual band name, we kind of came across, we were watching, I think it was either the National Geographic Channel or the History Channel, I can't remember what it was, but it was a show called Taboo, I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one on culture where people do scarring and body suspension. It was like an hour-long episode. And in that episode, you would see some guy was like hanging from his chains, from his own skin, hanging over glass. One person was walking on a bed of nails. Another person was laying on razors. And, you know, we kind of, you know, messed up. Like, we're like, oh, yeah, I can't remember exactly how it came about with the name Chains Over Razors. But it was, I mean, it was one of many, but it was kind of a mistake. It wasn't something like we planned or mulled over. It was just like, it just came out of nowhere. And after all the band names we're thinking of, we're like, wow, that's a pretty bold statement. You know, I mean, that can mean a bunch of things. You know, we usually picture it as something versus something else when you think about it. You know, it puts a subliminal message of, like, you know, two warring factions. So when we finally came down to it, like, you know, I think that's the name we're going to go for. It represents some sort of struggle. And that's where the name came about.
And whenever I think about it, it always reminds me of a street brawl.
Well, I think a horror movie, because you look at the cover of the record, you got the skeleton, looks like barbed wire on this chair in the middle of nowhere, somewhere you don't want to be. Actually, that's another catchy thing I want to compliment you guys on, is the cover's catchy. The whole packaging is pretty catchy, especially in the digital age. I'm glad to see a young band kind of keeping on to the older school roots and putting something together that you can hold in your hands and say, you know, that's pretty freaking cool looking.
You know what? I miss the days of going to a record store and waiting in line for a new release and getting the artwork and the lyrics and being able to just physically hold and read through everything. And that was always an exciting thing, where I think today in a digital age, it's easily missed. It's like, oh, let's go on iTunes, here's a song, you know?
Yeah.
You know, to actually have a whole theme, you know, like the packaging, and then you pop the CD in and you crank the shit out of it. You know, it's just that whole aspect, you know, it's definitely something I think today's generation missed, and something I have to say that we were lucky to experience before it went out.
Well, let me ask, and I, you know, you don't have to tell me how old you guys are or anything like that. I'm 48, so I'm old school, man. I was lucky enough to be born in the late 60s and then got into Kiss, and then in the 80s I got to live through the whole metal explosion of the late 70s, early,
wait,
you know, early 80s.
I thought we were all 18 now.
Oh, yes. Yes, we are. But, I mean, are you guys, you know, I know this is a newer band, but I don't know if you guys have been doing it for a while, or you're younger guys with just kind of that, you love that older stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely grew up on, well, you know, Beatles, Elvis, you know, Motown. I have to say that we're very thankful that we actually were in growing up through those generations. And like I said, to actually be right at the tail end of an era of music, you know, even going back to just talking about the packaging and going to record stores. We grew up like on Beatles, and, you know, even experienced vinyl and still listen to vinyl and 8-track, you know. We're not too far off in age, Alan. I think, you know, it's just something I think a lot of people miss. There is a lot of crap out there today. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of bullshit out there, and I think it's interesting to see that people are, especially the very young generation, are actually going back and discovering vinyl. And, we grew up on Kiss. I mean, our first experience with Kiss is when they used to have a TV show. I mean, yeah, my brother and I must have been like 6 years old at the time.
We were way younger.
Way younger.
We were still in diapers, I think.
Still in diapers, but I remember seeing Kiss on TV in their TV show, you know. And, I mean, that sent us down the rock and roll path.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. I remember, I think it was the Paul Lynn Halloween special. I was a kid and went to bed and begged my parents to wake me up when they performed. And they were cool enough to wake me up, and I got to see them on this Paul Lynn Halloween special, which was, you know, just made my day, you know. It was awesome. That was my first real metal band, and then, you know, Van Halen, and then got to Ozzy, and then I didn't discover Sabbath until Dio was in Sabbath, and then I kind of went backwards a little bit. I think a lot of guys did that of our age group.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I you know, my brother and I pretty much stole our parents' record collection. I mean, everything from the Doors and you name it, you know. So we were lucky to have been around a historical moment of music, and there's not a day that goes by that we're not appreciative of it, and it's something that we bring into our own aspect and our rendition of what we do. I can't even think of how many vinyl records we've also destroyed.
Wow.
I mean, literally grooving the needle through the damn vinyl where you couldn't even play it anymore. And, you know, at a young age, you know, I mean, practically in diapers and just listening to music religiously. Maybe at the time we didn't really understand what we were listening to. It just gravitated to us, you know?
Yeah.
And
now I look back and I'm going, that was the best damn thing that could ever happen.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. And you guys turned it into something very positive with your group here. Let me ask you, how long has the group been together? I'm assuming have you and your brother played in groups, you know, all your career, or have you all kind of been apart and said, hey, let's do something together? How did the whole Chainsaver Razors group come together?
This is Andy here. My brother and I have been playing music together for, I would say, 22 years now, overall, of different groups and stuff like that. As far as Chainsaver Razors, we formed that in 2014. But prior to that, my brother and I have always been exposed to each other's playing. And that's, like, one of the key points when we came together as Chainsaver Razors is how intertwined we are musically together. And you can definitely hear that on the record, is that we're almost as if, like, one person doing both. And, yeah, a good 22, 23 years, I think, we've been playing together.
Yeah.
Yeah, in different groups in and out. Yeah, it's been a long one.
And when we did this record, it was produced by Carmine Appice.
Dude, that's freaking awesome.
And he definitely caught on to that right away. He's like, listen, he's like, you guys have been playing together forever. He's like, there's something about what you guys do. It sounds like a full band for two guys. And this record doesn't have bass on it. We're pretty much a two-piece with a singer.
Well, that was my question for you guys, because I know in the in the literature I got from you guys, you're a three-piece, but I didn't see bass, so I didn't know, Mikey, if you were playing bass or if anybody was playing bass, because it's got such a killer heavy sound.
Yeah, and Carmine capitalized on that. He's like, listen, he's like, the two brothers, he's like, you guys sound like as if there's a whole band. He's like, you don't need bass. And at first we were scratching our head like, seriously? You know, like, even talk to him like, hey, you know, let me figure out a bass later. And he's like, you don't need it. He's like, this sounds so massive. He's like, where are you even going to put the bass? He's like, you and your brother cover the whole register in the frequency range. And he's like, hey, there's no place you can put it in the tuning we're in. And for a little bit, we were writing and recording a record, you know, we would nudge him in the arm and be like, hey, sure, this one's in a different key, you know? And he's like, nope, you guys are going to be a three-piece. And sure enough, he was right.
I think Carmine's comment, too, when we were recording, was that since you and I have been playing as brothers, writing songs together all these years, just us two, is that, you know, we didn't have other people in, you know, part of songwriting.
Yeah, especially when we were growing up.
Our songwriting process has been that we both cover and do everything together instead of looking for an outside point to come on in to put their part. And that's where he realized that I think us two, we tend to write and cover different parts of it to make the song actually work.
We really didn't even recognize it. He saw it right away, but we were always scratching our head like, really? And it wasn't until we started listening back to what we were recording while we were writing, and we were like, holy shit, he's right. You know, it just covered everything, and we stuck with it. And especially for the first time doing it like that, yeah, we've been in other projects throughout the years, and you have, you know, maybe five members, you know, and two guitar players and bass, but they actually go out as a three-piece. And we went out in April, with Metal Allegiance. We went out with those guys, which is, you know, Bumblefoot and Mark Mangy and the guys from Testament.
Alex Skolnick,
Chuck Billy, Mark Oswego from Death Angel, and Mike Portnoy, Dream Theater. And they asked us to go on a road with them, which was such an amazing experience.
Oh, I bet.
And, you know, you're talking about, like, hardcore metal fans, you know. In metal, you can't bullshit people. You know, they'll sniff you out right away and throw you off the stage. And here we came on out, it was just us three, and just meeting the fans afterward, it was so awesome to hear their feedback of how jaw drop they were, and their words were always like, how do three fucking guys make so much noise? You know, and we're just like, we just do what we do, you know, but to be so accepted immediately, and the musical connection that we made with the audience, and even what our songs were about, they took an understanding and a personal experience with them with that, you know, and felt what we felt personally when we were writing the songs. So it was just such an amazing feeling. And even when we rehearsed before we go on a tour, there'll be times we're jamming, and I even think to myself, like, how the fuck are we doing this? You know, it took us 6 months to tighten it down after we finished the record. But, you know, Carmine really making sure that on the record, you know, we didn't go overboard. And we really took the element. Granted, it's a digital age with recording, but we have recorded on analog in the past. Mm-hmm. And take that concept and apply it the way our musical heroes like Aerosmith or even U2, you know, where you hear stories where, like, tape is always going, even if they weren't playing, because you never know when you pick up an instrument and you capture something. And that's the element we wanted to bring to this record, and Carmine helped bring that spontaneity to it and pushing us past our comfort zone. And the elements that you hear on this record all came out without us even planning or expecting it. And that's how the foundation of the whole record was built. And that excitement still stands to this day after a billion times of hearing it back in the studio. I still get that impression, you know, mm-hmm. as being a personal fan of the group, which is important.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. How did you guys hook up with Carmen Appice?
We were actually, prior to even recording the record, with our agent, we were, you know, looking for a producer and, you know, trying to figure out, like, what we were going to do, and his name kind of came up. So we had, I think it was two demos, yeah, or three demos, and we sent it to him. And within, I think, 24 hours later, we get a call. Actually, Mike got a call from Carmine directly saying, I want to work with you guys. I want to record and produce your record. And after that, we locked it down, and we went out to New York. Our singer met with Carmine to talk about, you know, what we're looking to do. And probably about a couple weeks later, we went right into New Jersey's studio and started tracking the record with Carmine.
Yeah. It was pretty wild. We never actually thought it was going to happen, too, when the word actually got thrown around. We're like, man, this guy's a rock legend. Like, do you really think he's going to work with us? And sure enough, he was like, listen, I love what I heard. I'm full in. And he literally shut everybody else out after that. He was getting calls, even when we were out there, he was getting calls for people asking them to produce their record. And he's like, no way, I'm working with these guys and only these guys. And it was jaw-dropping. It's like, man, I just watched this guy on that metal show 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? And it's just like, this is unreal. I can't believe this is happening. And such an amazing thing. And we built such a brotherhood with them. And are pretty much on a regular phone call basis with the guy, as if we've known him for years, you know. And
that's awesome.
And if you ever get to talk to him in his interviews, man, he will blow your mind with stories. You know, it is, I mean, day one in the studio, he was talking Zeppelin and Hendrix with me, and I had to walk out of the studio to get some air, because I just couldn't believe, like, wow, you can't get this kind of story on VH1, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know, talk about something that nobody will even know, you know, and the hand he had with Zeppelin and everything, it was just like, oh, my God, it's like, no way, you know what I mean? I was like, when I was a punk-ass kid taking guitar lessons, I was learning this stuff, and now 1 degree separation from fucking John Bonham. You know,
that's awesome. Kate,
you know, Jimi Hendrix, you know, and even Zappa. I mean, and the list goes down the line. I mean, it is truly impressive what he's built in his career. And, I mean, if you even get to pick up his book, read his book, it is fantastic.
Yeah, we had the we were fortunate to have the opportunity to interview him, and he's a no nonsense kind of guy. Tells you how it is, and he's pretty funny. It was funny when he was doing the thing with his brother Vinny, and we did the interview.
I imagine it was a ball busting experience.
Oh yeah, he was like we were sitting there. He was eating like a hoagie or sandwich during the interview, and he was talking with his mouth full. I was like laughing to myself. I'm like, this is freaking awesome. I'm talking to Carmine Peace. He's eating a hoagie or something. He's calling his brother Vinny a knucklehead, and all this stuff's going on. It was awesome, man. It was one of the funnest interviews I've done.
I mean, the Italian comes out in him, and it just cracks me up, man. I mean, I met Vinny for the first time 5-6 months ago.
Back in May.
Yeah, and I actually had to pick him and Carmine up from O'Hare Airport because they were doing the drum wars here in Chicago, and I'm stuck in traffic. And it's one thing, you got Carmine, you know, the Italian ball buster, you know, in a loving way, and then now I got his brother in the back seat. So, hey, Mike, why are we moving so slow? And I'm stuck in traffic on the expressway, and I'm looking at him like, where can I go, man? You know? You know, it's like you get two of them in one room. It's like, put up the guard. Your shield has to go up because they're going to start 1-2 hitting you with good punches.
Oh, I figure, man. A lot of ball busting, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. But it's so funny, man. I mean, it just cracks me up.
Well, Andy, you had to be probably on cloud nine, especially because you're with Carmine Peace, his drummer. Did he show you anything? Did you learn anything from him, or did he kind of leave you be? How was the experience of working with Carmine?
Oh, I was definitely nervous. The only thing I can think of in my head is don't suck. You know, he's just the master of his craft. So, you know, I knew I couldn't pull any punches or try to slide by anything. With working with him, he was always about open creativity and letting me just experiment with, you know, different ideas, you know, not be straightforward. That was one of his main focuses, just be spontaneous. Do whatever you want to do. Don't be straightforward. Don't pull a lick out of his, you know, first page of his drum book, was his saying, is what he would say all the time. He just, you know, would just let me experiment and just do whatever I want to do. If he had suggestions, he would definitely toss suggestions in there, or he would definitely push me past my limitations and really just push. Like, if I did something that was extremely technical, he'd be like, that's awesome, you know, but we're going to have you go, you know, one step further. And sometimes it'd be so demanding where it would be like, can I even pull this off? Can I even do this? And I would get maybe like a half hour, 45 minutes in the studio and be like, I got to figure out the technique. How am I going to do this? And then play the song from beginning to end doing it. And
let me add a side note here, Alan. There was plenty of moments where they were having drum-offs together.
Awesome.
Yeah, we did have a bunch of drum-offs together. We did play around and trade some licks back and forth on my drum kit where he was showing me different styles of linear patterns that he's huge into. He would show me like patterns of 7s, 9s, 11s, and you know how he's doing fills with the stuff. And we would just mess around a few times. I think a couple of times that they were throwing with my brother and everybody wanted to throw stuff at us because they couldn't tie us away from my
chair. That's when the engineers were like, well, I guess I'm going to go and get a coffee. This will be a few minutes.
It was awesome. It was definitely awesome jamming with all of it. We would have fun together just playing around the drum kit all the time. It was pretty cool.
Well, he's the one that actually gave us our nickname, the Vapor Brothers.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, because, you know, we tend to smoke cigarettes, but we've switched to, you know, the electronic vaping, or digital, as we call it.
Uh-huh.
And we must have vaped out the studio room like it was a fog machine. And he's like, you damn Vapor Brothers. He's like, I can't even see where I'm walking. And it just stuck from there.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome.
Well, they had to walk out of the council room just because he couldn't see, like, you know, 6 inches past his face. I can't even see my own arm.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I mean, you could have got a better guy to, you know, to help you out in the beginning, too.
I would love to do another record with him. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, let me ask you this. For guys that have not heard your music yet, what is the best, or how would you best describe your sound?
Smooth jazz.
Yeah, I was going to say adult contemporary, leaning on a little bit of pop. A little bit of pop. Britney Spears-ish, you know.
Yeah, you know. Oops, we did it again, right?
You also do a cover of that. That'd be brutal.
You know, we generally just tell people hard rock or heavy rock, metal. We keep it pretty general. I know people ask, like, oh, what kind of band? And it's just like, well, we can't really pinpoint ourselves to a band. And two, if you were to, most people would get that idea that you then sound like that band. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we're us. We do what we do. So we keep it very general. Two, we have such a variety of influence of music, as we discussed earlier, that, you know, I know with metal, it's always like one part of metal, and that's it. And we keep ourselves open to all aspects of music. And how we interpret hard rock and metal. And we don't want to lock ourselves down. So definitely we would just tell people heavy rock metal. You know, I've even had interviews with magazines. They're like, well, if you had to sell it to somebody, how would you do it? And I would be like, I'd probably sit you in the car, throw the CD in, lock you in the car and say, see you in an hour.
There you go.
You know, and let it speak for itself. And, you know, we write songs. That's what we do. And so definitely heavy rock, hard rock, metal is the only way, easy for us to describe it.
Yeah, and I would agree. It's pretty brutal, but I like that you have the brutality, but you also have the melody. And I was thinking about that today. I was like, if I were to say, who does this band sound like? I couldn't figure it out. It took me until I heard the CD maybe the fourth or fifth time. Where I said, you know, there's one band that I could say, well, they're kind of like that. And I would say you're a little bit like Seven Dust in that.
Oh, nice.
They bring
That's a great band.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they have the brutality, but they bring in the melody. And LeJean, when he sings clean, is so awesome, but he can also go grunt and, you know, be pissed off too at the same time. So that's the closest comparison I could come to, but not saying you sound, oh, you guys are Seven Dust clones. You're not even close to that, you know?
Right. No, and you know what, man, I love Seven Dust, and I got to say that, you know, they are such a influential band for many, but they are great songwriters.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen Seven Dust many times live, and you know what? Those guys are fucking tight. You know, they're just great. And anybody, if they get a chance to see them, I'm saying this on air, go see Seven Dust if you can.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
It's worth it.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say, and you hit it on the head, Mikey, was y'all are as tight as they are, and I think that precision tightness is kind of where I got that comparison with Seven Dust. That and the melody part, but he's so brutal, and I'm blown away knowing that you guys are a three-piece, that's for sure.
Yeah, Carmine calls us the White Stripes of Metal.
That's awesome, man.
But, you know, it's just, that's cool, man. I mean, that's a hell of a compliment. Thank you.
You're welcome, man. You're welcome. Well, let's dive into the record. It's called Crown the Villain, and I want to talk about one of my favorite tracks right now, which is Promises of War. Can you tell me a cool story about how that song came together for you guys?
Promises of War!
We went to war. That song, basically, I don't want to give too much of the meaning because I think it would be, takes away from the fun of somebody's perception of what it means.
Yeah.
But for me, it actually has to do with about what I call corporate warfare. Basically, the influences of major corporations.
By the way, I apologize. I'm vaping in here, so.
You know, I thought I heard a minute ago. I'm like, what? Man, are they smoking a joint, or what's going on over there?
Yeah, my brother brought it to my attention. He's like, dude, it sounds like you're hitting the bong.
It did, dude. I'm like, shit, I guess it's time for me to get a beer. I'll join them.
Sorry for interrupting on that.
No problem, man.
Yeah, Promises of War is basically what that's had to do is corporations really being the major influences of war for their personal agenda as a company to influence, you know, everything towards them and what they want. We always see war and say it's, you know, it's politicians, you know, government versus government. And a lot of times you wonder, really, is it government versus government or is it, you know, which corporation has the biggest set of balls to see how much money they can throw to push, you know, something towards their way and the way they want it. So when you hear that song, that's what it references to. As far as writing the song, we made it sound like it was like a train moving fast forward that never ends. You know, even though there's tight stops, but we wanted that, like, razor sharp to really make it sound like it's moving the story along, is how quick, fast paced something could, you know, move towards an agenda.
And that was actually one of the first songs we tracked on the record.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I really dig that one. That one is very, very strong. Want to bring up another one. How about Monster? Can you give us a little background on Monster?
To do with, like, everybody's own personal darkness.
Yeah.
The dark side of every single person that everybody's shows, you know, rears its head every once in a while. No matter if you've met the nicest person, there's that opposite dark side that is the hide of each person.
Yeah.
You know, you meet your chuckle and hide of every person, and when you meet that other side, it's never a nice experience.
And that is one heavy track, definitely. Very precise as well.
Oh, I agree, man. I agree. Just, like I said, a lot of the tracks on this record are just so in your face, brutal, and then you're like, hey, where'd that melody come from? I dig that. That's kind of my favorite type of metal. I like some good, brutal stuff, but if it's just a total brutal, I can do that, but I like some melody mixed in.
Hell yeah, and actually, if you get a chance to, we just released our music video a little over a week ago. I'm not sure if you got a chance to check it out or not, for one of the songs on our album called Damnation.
That's a killer track too, man.
Yeah, and that song actually has to do about how our soldiers, you know, who fight for our freedom and
they come back and they're injured. And this is actually based on a true story. I met a soldier who had shrapnel in his head. Literally, oh, wow. Part of his leg, like a chunk of his leg, was missing, and had shrapnel on the side, and he was getting chronic migraines. And I was like, "Can't you? You know, isn't the government giving you help, you know, for this?" And he goes, "Man, I've tried everything and anything to get help, and they just won't help me." Ouch. And that really angered me to hear that. I have a lot of friends who served and family, you know, who served. And to hear this story, meeting the soldier, as time went, I started meeting other soldiers, and they started voicing how they felt and were dealing with the same thing. And it blew my mind. I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening and how nobody really is even talking about it. And so we wrote a song as a soldier's voice of, you know, telling the world of how they really feel, you know, and in our eyes, these soldiers are our heroes, you know, and we want to say and let them know that we do support them and have their back and we'll help them. And that song talks about their perspective and even how they feel towards, you know, the government of, you know, going to war, and how they truly feel that we shouldn't even be at war in doing this, and how the government, you know, brings up the ugly side of themselves and, you know, treats them as if they're expendable, and it's just sad.
Oh, I agree, man. I agree. And not to be too political, but I think the current administration is really taking a lesser approach when it comes to military than previous didn't do a great job, but we had a stronger military, and I think they took care of our vets better. I think the last 8 years there's been less focus on our military and actually kind of weakening the military. But don't get me started. This isn't a political show.
Yeah. Hey, no, I get it, man. And this is something that we've experienced, and to hear it, you know, and this trending thing happening, you know, with soldiers and hearing their side of it, and it really upset us. And I was like, you know what? You'll hear people song, these country songs, like, yeah, we're America, and we're yada, yada, and here's our troops. And it's like, yeah, but none of you are talking about how they really are, you know? You know, you're if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally, man.
You know, I think it's time to talk about the real ugly side of it. And, you know, to give the troops a song where they can put their fist in the air and say, yeah, you know what? They're right. This is how we truly feel. And give them a voice in a song.
That's awesome, man. Well, congratulations. It's a killer song. And I'm glad that you've touched some of the military guys, man. That is totally awesome, man.
Hell yeah, man. Always.
Well, I want to bring up one of the softer tracks, not that there's really a soft track on the record, but I'm really digging on Subtle Words, too. That's a very cool track. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Is there anybody listening? So live.
Subtle Words is basically about, if you think about it, it's equality. There's cyberbullying, there's the whole gay rights movement, there's equality between, you know, whites, African-Americans, Hispanics. It's just all across the board what's going on. Anybody who has depression, that's taking place. And really what the science is speaking about is, from a vocal point of view, is, hey, you know, you've got those who stand up and have those issues and are dealing with those issues. And you know what? When you think about it, no one is alone. Everybody is going through that. It's just majority of us are afraid to speak up about it. And that's what that song is about. Everybody is going through that. Just they're afraid to. And those who do speak up about it are the ones who get thrown back down and kicked to the curb. And then they're kicked when they're on the ground. Because, you know, those who are actually doing those particular actions are really the ones who are afraid of speaking up. And Subtle Words actually talks about that. And the song, that's why the song starts out as a call asking, you know, is there anybody out there? Is there anybody listening and wondering what it means to be alone? That's where the song kicks off, is that really everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah.
Everybody is in the same position.
And that song really took off when, remember a few years ago where Andy mentioned about cyberbullying?
Yeah.
How all these kids were killing themselves, you know, and from their depression. And when we heard that, I thought it was sad. And it's like, listen, you know, we went through it. You know, everybody has had at one time, you know, as a kid, of bullying that went on. But to see it go to the extent that it had was just shocking.
Oh, I agree. And,
you know, these kids are killing themselves. You know, now you got the damn social media, you know, where, you know, they're going online and publicly bashing, you know, people, and it's just wrong. And
it's even with like the gay rights movement that took place a couple years ago, where certain states, if they even came out, they were fired from their jobs just for that. And that's just, I mean, it's just plain wrong. Like, nobody should have to like live in fear of themselves. That's just, regardless of who they are or what they are, you should not have to be afraid to be yourself.
Right.
You know, you should be able to be your individual self, and everybody should be together on that to move, you know, for the greater good of humanity. And it sucks that we live in our own world in a sense of fear all the time, and it's just, and it sucks. You know, it's just, it's so disappointing that we have to deal with that.
Oh, I agree, man. I agree. Well, let me ask you guys this. It sounds like, I mean, these songs have a lot of depth to them. It's not like we're going to go grab some beer and try to screw chicks on Saturday night. There's a lot of meaning and depth in your lyrics. And you guys seem very close to them. Are you guys, I'm assuming you're the primary songwriters, you two, but as far as the lyrics go as well, do y'all write all the lyrics as well?
Yeah, you know, we all have a hand in writing it. You know, whether one of us writes a full song or not, I mean, we all speak from personal experiences and everything that you hear on this album. And but we also have an open mind as a group of collaborating. And, you know, I know bands will have a thing where, like, one guy does one role and that's it, you know, and for us, we didn't see it like that. We want to be open in the studio, and when you get, you know, it's like a pot of stew, you know. When you get all the ingredients in there and the collaboration, it just builds upon even a larger picture and a just even better song, because we're all together in on it and all putting our personal experience in it, and then try to relay that, you know, in 4 minutes. So it is challenging, but we do it that way. And you know what? It's awesome to be that collaborative.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and to turn out a product like you just did, it's definitely working. That's for sure. Let me ask you this, because Franco, you guys live in Chicago, and Franco's in Montreal.
First off,
how did you guys hook up? Was he in Chicago and y'all had started the band, or how did y'all end up hooking up with Franco?
We were in a past band together, before we moved into Chains Over Razors, and in one of the past bands, we had a singer that split on us. This was years ago, actually, our entertainment attorney got an email from somebody, and it was Franco, and it was saying, like, hey, I see you're looking for a vocalist, and he left his phone number, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to call this guy and just see what's up. And I must have talked to him for about an hour, and usually, you know, someone flies on in, you might, like, jam a couple of covers or something and feel it out. He came on in, and we just started writing. And then he kept on coming back, and kept on coming back, and we just went with it.
Oh, nice!
You know, and didn't even have to go like, "Hey, you're in the band." It was just kind of like there was. It was like we were always together, and I know a lot of people are like, "Well, how do you do that when you're in a different country?" But we know each other so well musically that, you know, however we're writing, we kind of know what we're going to expect from each other, so it just comes naturally. And today, you know, in the digital world, you know, you're just an email away. And, you know, really, Canada is an imaginary border, in my opinion. And it's not a far flight or a drive here. And, you know, when we get to work, wherever we travel or whatever studio, we all meet up. We get in the studio and we work, and then we hit the road. So there's never a hiccup at all. And he's been with us strong since. And, you know, one hell of a powerful singer. I'm glad that I picked up the phone one day and called him.
Yeah, no joke.
It was the best bad decision ever.
Well, you know, if you look at a lot of the classic bands, a lot of those guys don't even live, like Judas Priest. You know, Rob Halford, I think, lives in the States, and the rest of the guys live back in England. And I think Scott Travis is in, you know, the States as well. So everybody's kind of spread out. Same thing, I think, with Def Leppard. The guys are in Dublin, yeah. England. They're all over the place. But, you know, if you can all get in a room, did you guys record everything in the same room, or did you do any of it digitally?
Oh, no, we did it all in the studio.
Nice.
We didn't send any tracks out anywhere. I mean, if we did send out anything, it was just so that way, you know, prepping the, you know, who's next to go in the studio, and so they're aware of what they're getting into. But really, we wrote and recorded in the studio together and just went for it.
That's killer. Because I think when you know, three guys in your situation, when you're all in a room, it's more organic. And you can almost tell a difference when one's just like sending files, you know, over the internet, and a guy's lending his vocals, didn't really have a lot of participation. There's some projects out there today that, you know, though they're good, I mean, because you have a good vocalist or whatever and he's got a
right.
name, but there's some guy in Italy or Germany or something like that doing everything and then sending it, and it doesn't seem as organic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, we didn't want that. You know, we wanted to bring the organic and be in the room, and everyone participated. And, you know, and Carmine was a big encouraging factor of that.
Oh, that's killer. Cause, yeah, because he's that old school kind of guy. And,
you know, going into it, we wanted to take that old school approach, you know. I said, I'm a huge Aerosmith fan, and I remember watching the Pump video on, you know,
I remember that, dude.
Yeah, great, great documentary. And, you know, they even said tape was always rolling. Even if they were just sitting around, it was recording, because you never knew what someone would come up with. And that's the aspect we wanted on that. We wanted that magical moment. And, you know, sometimes the mistakes create some of the best shit.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what happened. And it was great to see it happen. And it was exciting.
I would love to see that Pump video again, because that was so cool seeing Tyler. He was just kind of like the drill sergeant in that studio, man.
Right.
It was
right.
Pretty crazy, man. And you see Perry keep this cool, and I'd say, hey, man, you're being a dick.
Right.
You know? But, no, I really enjoyed that. I forgot all about that. I was like, damn, I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Yeah.
But that's killer that you guys are doing that.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure what song it was, but you two were even talking about it, which is became the cut that everyone hears today. They were talking how they were doing it over and over in the studio, and they, they never just felt like they were in that moment, and then all of a sudden they took a break, you know, just a step away, then tape was still rolling, and they decided to get on their instruments, and they just ran through it, and they all felt that magic moment happen, and it was captured. And, you know, to hear that, you know, and being in past bands, you know, you can cut a demo over and over, you can play to a click, and you could have 30 CDs of the same song, but you could pop in CD 3 and CD 5, and you're like, man, why is it I zone into it every time I listen to it, and then I listen to CD 2, it's the same thing's played, but I'm not zoning into it. And then you go into a studio and you track it, but then you've played it out so much that you kind of become numb to it. And once again, we didn't want that to happen. So we came in on fresh, not even knowing what was going to happen. And just hit record and let's go. And the result was Crown the Villain.
And there, it's a very great product, man. I'm really happy for you guys, and I'm glad I got introduced to you. So what's the plan now? Just a bunch of touring? I know you got some dates with the... let me ask you this, because you're going to have to give... When you're around Carmine and Vinny, do you say a piece or you say apathy?
They'll bust around that.
You're probably dancing on the eggshells like, I'm just going to call him by the first name, no Mr. Apiece or Mr. Apathy.
Yeah, they still crack jokes about it.
Oh, do they? That's awesome.
Yeah, so, and then I think they have another brother, and they go by PJ with him. they're absolutely hilarious, and we shared the stage with them recently in Syracuse, New York, in an outdoor festival, which was a stormy and humid day, man. But it was a blast, and we once again got invited out with Metal Allegiance again and played in Brooklyn at St. Vitus, or was that Queens? I think Queens. At St. Vitus, which was just awesome, man. And it's just great to see how supportive people are and come on out and just rock the hell out, you know. And we hang out with everybody afterwards. So we did that run. And right now, we're just getting back in the studio and just kind of putting together ideas again. But we're really prepping on hitting the road again, especially in 2017. We just want to be road dogs and just constantly on the road. So that was our plan in support of our record, and we want to perform these songs live, so we're going to just keep hammering away.
Awesome, man. Well, I would think it'd be cool if you could jump on, you know, kind of a tour where maybe one of these European bands come over for like a string of dates and get on as the opening act. I know we saw Opeth and Blind Guardian, which I was so thankful for last year.
Two great bands.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, if you could hook up on something like that, or even, I mean, if you're lucky enough, you got the Skolnick connection. Because Testament's got their brand new record coming out.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
That would be killer.
We would love to do it. So, Testament, if you're listening, we want to go on the road with you guys.
Exactly. Well, you know, I was about to say Anthrax. I couldn't remember. There wasn't anybody from Anthrax involved in the Metal Allegiance.
You are correct. There is. Charlie Benante.
Okay, I thought somebody was.
The Metal Allegiance. And they just flew out to, I think, the UK. And he was on that bill with them.
Oh, wow. That's killer, man. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck, man. I hope everything works out for you.
Thank you, man. And thank you for having us on air. It really means a lot to us.
Oh, man, it's been... the pleasure's been all mine. I've had a blast. Let me ask you, Mikey, Andy, is there anything you guys would like to tell the fans out there before we let you guys go today?
Yeah, I hear Alan makes the best burgers.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
No.
Just follow us on Facebook. You can go to chainsoverrazors.com. All our links are on there. Please pick up our album. You know, support us. It helps us get to your town. And, and we hope to see you soon.
Andy, would you like to say anything?
Yeah, pick up the record, pop into your player, turn it up on max volume, and cause some shit.
There you go. I could have said it better myself. Well, guys, I want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com. And we want to tell all the fans out there to pick up
Chains Over Razors,
Crown the Villain. Do you like that metal voice? I tried to do my metal voice for you. So.
Nah, that was good. It sounded like a thriller film. I'm in.
Probably put a chill up your spine, huh?
Yeah.
Guys, I got to tell you, man, I had a blast talking to you both. I wish you both the best of luck with your band. And if you ever make it down to Texas, I will be in the front row. And we'll grab... hey, Andy, we didn't ask you. Do you drink beer or are you a whiskey guy, too?
I am a whiskey guy. My new drink of choice right now is Tullamore Dew, actually.
Okay, well, you guys get whiskey, and we'll make sure Genghis is there, and we will have beers with you.
Awesome. Sounds like a plan.
Definitely sounds like a plan. We're going to meet up, we're going to pop the record in and drink some whiskey and bourbon and beers and pop some shit.
I do. We can do that. We can talk shit with the best of them. Believe me.
Nice.
Well, fellas, again, thank you so much. Good luck with everything. And let's definitely chat if you guys come in our area or when you guys get another record coming out.
Sure, man. I'll definitely give you a call.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, Alan, thanks.
Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X, so check them out, and keep checking us out, and horns up.